Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Free-for-All Friday. This is a Free-for-All Friday where I've turned up the gain ever so slightly on my audio mixing board because I am not in my office right now. I'll turn that down a little bit so I'm not blasting your ears too much, but that's why I'm grateful for our sound engineer, Nick Chamberlain, who can do wonders with any audio that I send him. Reason for that is, of course, it is late at night here at the Horn household. The children have gone off to bed. One of them, thankfully, is in a small modified prison that he hasn't figured a way to get out of yet. But the other, who knows when he'll pop his head up. I thought this week what would be fun to talk about would be discipline. Oh, the discipline debates and wars. I'm sure if you're a parent, you're familiar with trying to raise children and figuring out what kind of discipline that you should take part in. Of course, nearly all of us can remember being a child and being on the other end of that. So I thought I would bring in my better half so that we could talk about something that whether you have small children, you have older children, or you know people with small children, you might find some of what we would share on the podcast today to be helpful, because this is what's going through our lives as new parents. And you know, we try to research this. We've talked to a wonderful counselor I'll share with you more about that I recommend to anyone who's really great at giving parents tips on how to discipline and raise their children well. So very excited to talk about all this to you today and bringing us in, always keeping the noise down, not to wake up you know who. My better half, of course, Mrs. Laura Horn. Laura, welcome back to the podcast.
Woo! The hard part about this podcast is you always have me on late at night, and I am just not a night person. It's like 7:30, and that I can get up at 5, I can get up at 4:30, but after 7, I am just done. But it is really good to spend this time with you, since it's like the only time that we get to spend together. So, and those who can't do teach. So that's funny.
That was something you were worried about, because I first came to Laura. I said, I want to do a podcast on discipline. And her response was essentially, then shouldn't you have someone on who's neither of us that knows what they're doing? I said, no, that's the thing. We both don't know what we're doing. And I think a lot of people can really resonate with that. And I'm really skeptical of most people who think they've got every single thing figured out anyways.
No, that's really true. And I remember today, actually, I was talking to my mom and I said, you know, Trent wants us to do a podcast on, you know, discipline, because we, you know, graduated from this program that Trent mentioned earlier today. It's a 12-week session, 12-week sessions with this woman who we'll share more about later. But yeah, and I said, you know, to talk about discipline. And my mom's face, we were actually FaceTiming and she could just not hide her, I guess, curiosity. Like, what? I've seen you in action, Laura. Why are you doing this? And then I told my sister and she said, you know, I think that's really good, because I think it's something that everybody struggles with. And for those who don't struggle with it, you know, usually their children are terrors or, you know, really scared of them, or, you know, so I think anybody that's honest with themselves as a parent has really struggled in this area. And I know myself, I have really struggled with this. So I think it's good. We found some solutions and we'd love to share those.
And before we do that though, I thought I would share with you kind of the three different models of parenting that are out there. These were first put forward by Diana Bomrand in 1966. And there, if you kind of look at it, think of a gauge of parenting. There's the three models. The middle one is kind of like the Goldilocks syndrome. It is the, you know, that's the one that's just right. It's the hardest one to get to. It's the thinnest part of the dial. Usually people waver into one of the other two that are not as good. So I think what would be good is let's talk about these two styles that we oscillate between, and then what's the ideal here. So I'll start with the first one, and that would be, well, there's the three styles of this Bomrand put forward. There's authoritarian parenting, there's permissive parenting, and then authoritative parenting, or what I call, you know, friendly parenting. So let's start. So permissive parenting, there's a great website, parentingscience.com, and this is how it defines it. The official psychological definition of permissiveness concerns parental control. Are permissive parents too lax? What criteria must parents meet to be labeled permissive? So how researchers define it and screen it, what studies really say, this is how it's defined, the textbook definition. There are two key traits for being a permissive parent. You are nurturing and warm, which is good for kids, but you're reluctant to impose limits. So basically, I guess you could even say there's four styles. So there's the permissive parent who is warm, no rules. There's the authoritarian parent who is rules without warmth. There's the authoritative parent who has warmth and rules. And then one that doesn't come up a lot, but is the fourth that gets added on, is the uninvolved parent. Neither warm nor rules. They just basically just ignore children. So do you think that's a kind of good scope to cover where different people are at?
Yeah, absolutely. And Trent, which one would you say that you are?
Oh, I. Why do you ask questions you already know the answer to?
Using that Socratic approach that you love so much, Trenorn.
Yeah, no, I am the permissive parent. I mean, I think, and I'm not sure why, you know, what causes that. You know, it can be different things like genetics. It could be how you were raised. But when I am in, when I'm in this situation and, you know, there's a choice between issuing a punishment or not, I'm more likely to not issue a punishment. And so I guess for me, the hard thing is I think both authoritarian parenting and permissive parenting operate out of some kind of a fear. Like I'm afraid that a punishment, and I think a lot of permissive parents get this way. They're afraid that a punishment is going to alienate their child, is going to drive the child away from them. Or they think, this is the mistaken idea I get sometimes, but if I'm really nice to you, that'll provide an example of being nice and you'll want to imitate that. So if I'm just nurturing and loving and I'm just giving you a bunch of stuff, well, naturally you'd want to just be that way, but it doesn't quite have those consequences, does it?
I would actually argue that you've come a long way in parenting. I think that was originally your propensity, but I think, you know, as we've grown together as a couple and, in parenting, I think you've gotten a lot better. So it just stinks though. That first child, poor kid. Yeah.
I always tell people ask me what it's like to write a book. I say, well, writing books is a little bit like raising children. Well, I think I might have said this in my author podcast, but you know, your first book, oh, you just make all the mistakes on. When I go back and look at Answering Atheism, I'm just like, oh my gosh, these sentences are all warbly and drawn on. Yeesh, what was I thinking? Now I get to my seventh or eighth book, I'm like, which book are you again? Is that one of my books? I don't know. And it's like when you have seven or eight kids, you're like, is that one mine, man? Ah, I think so. So you know, you kind of make your mistakes out at front, but this is a style of parenting. I appreciate you saying that I've grown in it because permissive parenting, you might think, oh, it's all warmth and what could go wrong with a kid. But the problem is when children do not have limits, they don't learn how to self-regulate themselves. So they lack the ability to self-regulate and that leads to problems down the line. So according to parentingscience.com, these are the effects of permissive parenting. In a longitudinal study tracking 281 American children from the age of 9, researchers found that kids with permissive parents were more likely to increase levels of aggression over time. The kids with the best outcomes had authoritative but not authoritarian parenting. Other studies have found links between permissive parenting and alcohol use among teenagers and higher rates of school misconduct and lower levels of academic achievement. And that makes sense. You think about people who just, their teenagers say, can I have people over for beer pong? And they're like, oh, I want to be the cool mom or dad. Then what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's like Mean Girls. Like, are you going to drink? I'd rather you do it in the house, you know?
Oh, that's with Amy Poehler's the mom, right?
Yeah. So, that's what it reminds me of. So what's interesting, though, is I am definitely have the tendency to be authoritarian, which is interesting. So, and I don't think that that's naturally my inclination, actually. I think it's purely out of laziness. And I think a lot of moms might struggle with this. At the end of the day, you're just done. And so you just yell, you just bark. And I think that that is my tendency. And but until, you know, this program that we went through and this individualized plan that we were on, that's what I really struggled with. And it wasn't until, you know, I started implementing some very concrete things. Jillian, she started working as a child psychiatrist, actually. And she noticed that children just had, you know, a pretty high recidivism rate. And then so she started working with the parents, and she noticed their behaviors would change within this 12-week period. So I think that that's really interesting that children are basically mirrors of ourselves. Unfortunately, sometimes that is ugly and sometimes it's really beautiful. So,
right. And so a lot of times you start thinking, well, how do I change my child's behavior? Honestly, it's probably your behavior that a lot of us who either give into permissive or authoritarian parenting, probably in our relationships with our spouse or relatives or our peers, we act mildly permissive or authoritarian to a socially acceptable level. But then our kids mirror that and do it to an unsocially acceptable level because they haven't figured out social norms yet.
Yeah, the worst is when they're in play and they start to act out something that you're embarrassed about, you know? And it always starts so sweetly, like, oh, Jesse and Woody, oh, here, Jesse, you can have some of my water. Oh, did you spill your water? I said, get in the corner! You know, really, like, oh, that's obviously a mirror of what I was doing.
Right. So you might think, okay, so permissive parenting doesn't work well. Like, you know, kids are going to misbehave, drink, they're going to do a lot of bad things. Maybe I just need to crack down. And for me, when I've been pushed to my limit, I just do Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and go from permissive to authoritarian. That's it. All your toys are being thrown away forever. You will have nothing. And it's just completely irrational. So according to parentingscience.com, it says when kids misbehave, it might seem tempting to enforce good behavior through threats, harsh punishments, and other forms of psychological control. But research suggests these tactics don't result in long-term behavioral improvements. On the contrary, they seem to make things worse. For instance, consider what psychologists call externalizing behavior problems, disruptive, aggressive, defiant, or antisocial conduct. If authoritarian disciplinary tactics work, we should expect them to lead to fewer such problems as children get older. That's not what we find. In a recent meta-analysis of more than 1,400 published studies, found that harsh control and psychological control were the biggest predictors of worsening behavior problems over time. So what's interesting is children with authoritarian parents, especially when they're little, what studies have shown is they're more likely to misbehave later in life, but even as kids, they're more likely to misbehave when no one is watching. They aren't good for the sake of being good. They're just good to not be punished. So instead of learning to be good, children of authoritarian parents just learn to not get caught.
Yeah, to me, that's actually probably the scariest form because, you know, you're just not forming character at all. So good to know that that's me. Awesome.
Well, don't worry, because if I'm permissive and you're authoritarian, it must mix together into something good, right? No, it's just if the parents aren't on the same page, that's a problem too. I have noticed, I think what happens both harsh authoritarian parenting, rules without warmth, and permissive parenting, warmth without rules, both of them ironically are caused by a same cause and have a same effect. I think the same cause is the parent is parenting according to their emotional gut reaction. So they're not thinking through logically what is the best thing to do. They're not willing to put in the effort to rise above their gut emotion. So for an authoritarian, the gut emotion is, I'm going to punish. And for a permissive parent, the gut emotion is, I'm not going to punish. And, you know, so you're running with your gut here. But then with both kids, whether they're permissive or authoritarian, they end up misbehaving later because they don't learn how to regulate consequences for themselves. The permissive kid never gets consequences. And the authoritarian kid, he gets them completely from the parents. So he never has to figure out consequences on his own. The parents control everything. So that's why our counselor, Jillian Newkirk, who runs Fly on the Wall Counseling, which I highly recommend. It's at flyonthewallcounseling.com. Helped walk us through kind of a 12-week program to be more like authoritative parents, which is warmth and rules and things that are consequence-based that even a child as young as 4 years old can understand. So I thought it would be fun is to share just a few of the tips we learned that we found helpful. You could use, honestly, these tips can work for people of any age, frankly, because you never really outgrow defiance and, you know, other things like that.
What's great is her first consult is free also. So, you know, there's no obligation or anything like that. Please don't think that, you know, we're trying to sell you anything or anything. But, you know, if you really struggle with this, Trent and I really agonized over disciplining, actually. And for me, I know that I would discipline heavily based on how I thought other people were perceiving me. For instance, in mass, if someone shot me a look, all of a sudden I'd find myself, you know, shooting my kids a look, you know, instead of really stepping myself back, like, who knows, maybe they were just looking back to admire my children. I don't know that. So for me, that was a great, you know, temptation to parent based on that. So, and then also just, you know, Trent and I were not on the same page when it came to disciplining. So just very different methods. So we found ourselves often fighting over this. So we just thought, you know, we just really need an expert in this. So her first consultation is free, like I said, and she just lays out a plan. Like, what are you going through? And it's individualized. And she just says, here is how we are going to address each individual step that you are struggling with over the next 12 weeks. And it's a huge commitment, but honestly, it's brought so much peace into our home. So, you know, it works 80% of the time, probably, like she said, 80% is perfect.
And that's a good tip just to start right there. That I think one thing that is helpful for us when you're disciplining, when you're trying to help kids to grow up right, is you can't think of it as, oh, well, if it's not 100%, like even if things are going well, as soon as a child misbehaves, it's like you get stuck at that moment and you brand them and say, oh, they're a brat or they're spoiled or they're whatever. And that's completely unfair to like give them this label over one thing where they mess up. Because what if somebody did that to us? Like, what if we were late to a party and someone's like, oh my gosh, you're a late person or you don't care about people. Like, none of us are perfect 100% of the time. And we hate being defined by when we have our low points. We need, and so I think this, what Jillian helped us see is to see where a child grows and to not define them at the places where they do fall short on that path. I think another thing that helped, that really helped me was consequence-based language. So, because when I would turn from permissive to authoritarian, I would say things like, if you don't put away that toy, then I'm going to take it and you're not going to get it anymore today. And then, so it feels completely out of the child's hands. Whereas when I was working with Jillian, subtly changing the language around, it really did change a lot for the kids to see, saying something like, oh, if you don't put away that toy, that tells me you don't want to have that toy out anymore. And so suddenly it's a subtle thing, but the child said, because when it's like, I'm going to take away that toy, it's like, I'm the big, strong, powerful person. What are they going to do? It's like the world's out of their control. But they say, it's like he says in their own little mind, well, I do want that toy out. I don't not want this toy out. Okay, then I'll put it away. I do want it. So that little shift, instead of saying, I'm going to do this, it's, you're telling me that you want this. That I think a lot of, especially with toddlers, the disobedience is the power struggle of figuring out, you know, I have some control in life. What control are you willing to give me?
Yeah. What I really love also is that kind of puts you on their side. Like, okay. And this is something that made us pretty uncomfortable at first, but now we're really comfortable in, is it is okay for them to disobey us, but there will be a consequence to that. I mean, it's not okay, but they can choose to disobey us. Because ultimately, they can choose to disobey us.
Right, yeah. Because so sometimes when I turn into authoritarian mode, and there are people who are just like this all the time. It's like, I am your father. You do what I say because I said so. Like, you know, and this is an idea that is just like, well, you just have to do what I say because I told you so. And if you don't do what I say, well, you just have to. But they don't. I mean, they can just disobey. For them to see, it's not, you're doing this because I said so. It's, you can do this or that. Which consequence do you want when you do this? And it's, well, it's not, I'm not the one being bad here. You're choosing, you get to choose which consequence. You get the choice here. Whereas, you know, in this battle for control, great, you get your control, but you also get the consequence that comes with it. It's up to you.
What's interesting too is I'm so grateful that Matthew gets to learn this as a 4-year-old, because I didn't super learn this, and I'm still learning this. Like, I make bad decisions and I'm like, oh, there's a consequence to that action. I just don't think things through all the time. So I'm just so grateful that he's getting the opportunity to learn this as a 4-year-old, because I didn't, you know. So yeah, that made us a little bit uncomfortable at first. Like, okay, you can choose to do that, but that's telling me that, you know, this is, you know, what you're telling me. So, you know, you can choose to throw your food. Absolutely. But that's telling me that you're done with dinner and you'd like a timeout. And sure enough, though, there have been almost no power struggles since changing our language. And I think kids ultimately just want control. And so, you know, they can control their bowels. They can control their bedtime. They can control their voice. They can control their body. That's why you get those violent tantrums around bedtime, because they don't want to go to bed.
Well, also, I think what helps is you give consequences and then not gets counterintuitive. Your gut reaction in a lot of these cases is, I'm going to yell. And if I yell, it's going to scare you or get your attention and make you do something. But eventually a kid just gets numb to that. Once again, the problem is going with your gut instead of having kind of a plan just to work things through. And it's okay to research, read books, see a counselor like Jillian to give you this kind of a plan to move forward. Because when you yell, what's helped us is, one, they have consequence-based approaches, and two, they don't see us yell as much. I mean, we're only human. We're still growing, obviously. But I find that when we don't yell, they don't mirror it. And it's a complete, even not even yelling, even just not being agitated, it's a completely different ball game.
Yeah, that's been really beautiful to witness. I mean, when I'm chill, Matthew and Thomas are chill. And that has been so wonderful. And so, yeah, like I said, it just puts us on the same side. And what I thought was really interesting also is one of our earlier sessions, she focused on, you know, pointing out that the positives in your child. So for instance, if you say, please don't go in the street, and they go over there and they, like, obviously I'm sure you wouldn't ask it that kindly, but you know, please don't go in the street for sake of example. And they go over there and they hover their foot over the street. And you're like, you're getting too close. You're pushing boundaries. You know, you assume the worst of your child all the time, when in reality, it's actually really hard for them to obey up to that point. So instead, like that positive language, like, thank you so much for not going in the street. Like those small decisions, like when a child raises their hand to hit you and they don't, like, thank you so much for not hitting me.
Right. Because if you're going with your gut, let's say child picks up a block, wants to throw it at you, see they're about to throw it at you and say, do not throw that at me. And they hold it and then they throw it at the couch instead. If you're authoritarian, you might see that as they are being defiant. So you want to throw blocks? Fine. You don't get any blocks anymore. You want to be this way? But instead, when you're always trying to find the positive in a child, that, I mean, obviously it's not ideal for them to throw a block anyways, but it's like you have to work with a child where they're at. And so, yeah, being able to say, thank you for not throwing that block at me. I could see it took a lot of energy for you to choose to not throw it at me and throw it at the couch so that you wouldn't hurt mommy. I really appreciate you did that. And children, so that's the problem also with a lot of discipline, is you only focus on don't do this, don't do that. Without positive reinforcement, it just feels like kind of a hopeless game for them, honestly.
And man, I'm telling you, our kids are little, but they love praise. And I'm so words of affirmation. So I get this. That's totally my love language. I mean,
oh, by the way, you're doing a great job at the interview. I'm super, no, the answers are very good. I'm glad I had you on.
I'm not going to lie to you. Today I wore jeans instead of sweatpants and Trent didn't say anything and a little part of me died. So there's that. I'm like, what? I'm wearing jeans for nothing. Jeans are really uncomfortable after you are like postpartum. Okay.
But I always think you look cute in your sweatpants. I think you look cute in whatever you're wearing.
Well, thank you very much. So anyway, but we digress. So yeah, but I just love praise so much. So I get it. So I just find the more that I praise a child, the more they want to do good. Like the more I'm like, wow, that was really kind. He'll like do something kind and then look at me like, did you see it?
And it's not empty praise. It's not just praise for the sake of filling their head. Because some people worry, well, will that make them spoiled? And it won't if you find something they've genuinely done that is praiseworthy, not just you're so beautiful or you're so handsome or you're so great at this, or, you know, it's the idea of when they make a morally good choice, making it praiseworthy, because we're really good at condemning morally blameworthy things. What if we put that much energy into praising morally praiseworthy things?
Right, exactly. And I remember one time talking to my sister about this. She has four beautiful children, both of them, actually. So, oh, now she has five. Surprise. So I was talking to one of my sisters and she said, you know, I was really worried that my child would be spoiled because, you know, I use this type of language. And this was before we had started meeting with Jillian. But she said, no, I really think spoiled children really lack a work ethic. That's really what make them spoiled. I don't think it's because, you know, they're loved by their parents or praised by their parents. I think it's just, you know, they really don't know how to work. You know, they go limp all the time when you ask them to do chores or that type of child, like the entitled heart rather than, you know, the one that received praise.
We're coming to the end of our time together. The show always flies by when I have you here. So I always am very appreciative. Like to share just a few things. One, do you think some of these approaches are similar to Love and Logic, which might be another good, like if we're going to recommend resources to people, I think that's probably has some helpful tips in there for people who want kind of this consequence-based approach for parenting.
I like Love and Logic for some reasons. I found some things to be different than what we have been going through. So Love and Logic is, for those of you that are unfamiliar, just a like Trent said, a consequence-based type of parenting. What I don't like about Love and Logic is it tends to provide no warnings for children. You go straight into the consequence. So they have to think through before they act, which I see the benefits of. But for me, that's hard for small children because they really don't know. And sometimes they do, you know, after, you know, you've habitually warned them about an action, they should know. So I don't know if you should warn them over that thing, those things, but everything is new for them. So I think sometimes it's hard for them to see that as fair if you don't give them a warning over that. The other thing that I think is different than Love and Logic is you have to create a new consequence every single time, almost with Love and Logic. And that gets kind of exhausting. It prides itself on being like super creative. But what's hard for that, especially as you have like multiple children and you're just really tired at the end of the day, I just really don't have the brain power to come up with a new consequence for everything. So what I like about our method is it really just, you find consequences that work for your child and you really just stick with those things that you know will really get them. Like Matthew really hates timeouts, but Thomas could care less. He throws everything overboard and he just waits out his time. And one time I asked him to say sorry and he literally turned his back around on me. So he just does not care. So, I think it doesn't take into account sometimes, you know, different temperaments for children. However, I do like, the reasoning behind it, what it explains, you know, that you give your child the opportunity to be smart and to plan for themselves, which I really like. So that's kind of the difference. So, I mean, if you had to read a book, I'd say Love and Logic is probably closely resembles what we've done. But I'd say what we've done is much more tailored and a little bit more strict, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. So Love and Logic is a good book. The counseling we've done is flyonthewallcounseling.com that I'd recommend. And one final caveat, it's a reminder, we are not experts. We are lifelong learners in this. We're still trying to figure this out. We just think these might be some tips you would find interesting to incorporate, to look into, and recommend other resources that are out there. To tie this up, I want to share two Bible verses that I think show against permissive and authoritarian parenting. Against the permissive parenting, discipline's a good thing. Hebrews 12:11 says, "All discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." So discipline is a good thing, but it has to be done well. In Ephesians 6:4, St. Paul says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." So being fair and firm, and I'm really appreciative of just what we've learned, and I hope it's been helpful for you here on Free For All Friday. And if you like the podcast, of course, be sure to visit trenthornpodcast.com to get a lot more great resources from us. Mrs. Horn, thank you for being here today. Any last words?
Good night, Trent.
I know. It's so late. Now look at my computer. 8:18. What happened to us? We used to be up to all hours of the night. Well, I was. You always went to bed at 8:30.
Yes, I did. It keeps me out of trouble in my defense, okay?
That is a good defense indeed. So glad you were able to stop by. I'm glad you were able to stop by as well. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. I'll catch you next week, and I hope you all have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.